I was put into a juvenile jail in Mexico because Mexican people found out that I was not Mexican.
I am so happy today to welcome Ovidilio Vazquez, who grew up in Guatemala. Actually, you worked in sugarcane fields, right, Ovi? Is that right?
That's correct. At the, some say, tender age of 14.
So you were like really youth labor, right?
I was very youth labor since the age of 8 years old, but I wasn't really the one doing the work. I was in the fields with my stepbrothers, and my job was to go get them water.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
So were you in school during the day, or were you not in school, or what were things like in Guatemala at that time?
Yes, I would go to school whenever it was possible. I went to school up to sixth grade, and the sugarcane fields, usually the harvesting of it is seasonal. So just maybe about 4 to 5 months maximum. And then, you know, there's no more harvesting of it. So I would go along with my stepbrothers to help out the family. My mom would say that I needed to learn to work.
So you have more and more now starting to become quite well known in the motivational speaking area, especially for youth, right? Like,
right.
High school kids. And does that come out of your background, Ovi? Like just maybe the struggles that you had in Guatemala to be able to get the kind of education you wanted? What kind of motivates you to want to really help youth to learn?
Yes. So my passion mainly was for the English learners because of the cultural relevance, right? They came from a place of speaking a different language, and now here having to adapt not only to the new language, but again, to the entirely new culture, depending on where they're from, of course. And I said, you know, I just want to go and share my story. And many do relate to how hard it is to communicate in a different language. Many do relate to how hard it is to miss your family back home and to live two lives, one here, one there. Many of the people that are looking for somebody very relevant, they find me to be a relevant person for the audience. And I just happen to share an authentic story with them, that with them, I mean the students, that they really see me as a role model without me having to say, hey, I am your role model.
So when you came from Guatemala, how old were you?
When I arrived to the United States, I was about to turn 16.
And did you come with documentation or without documentation? Did you cross the border, or what was your story? What happened with you?
Yeah, so the story, my mom asked me, I was working in the sugarcane fields then, and my mom asked me, hey, do you want to come to the United States? And like most immigrants, yes, of course I do. So she said, I think you're strong enough now to endure the journey of having to go through Mexico. Because most people do have this twisted. They think that Mexico helps us out. And when I say helps us out, meaning Central Americans, to get to the United States. And actually, that's not the truth. I was put into a juvenile jail in Mexico because Mexican people found out that I was not Mexican. And they have a lot of stopping points throughout Mexico with immigration so right. that they stop Central Americans. Then I got to the desert of Tijuana and San Diego, California. And that's when I was promised that I was going to walk about 6 hours. And then after 12 hours walking in the desert without food and water, we were like, you said it was 6 hours of walking. What happened? And I made it though.
Oh my, I will never forget. And I think the guy was from Guatemala. He was doing some yard work for me in Atlanta, Georgia. And we became friends and we were talking, and he had crossed the border in a similar fashion. And I asked him, what was the most difficult thing you went through, right? And he said there was a couple that was coming across the border. And of course, it's like what you say, right? It takes 6 hours, but it takes 12, or it takes one day, but it takes three. And, you know, the coyotes aren't necessarily truth tellers, right?
they shouldn't be surprised.
And he said there was a young couple coming across, and the woman was pregnant, and she fell sick in the desert and couldn't continue. And I asked him, I said, so what happened? And he said, Well, I just had to leave her. And I said, to die? And he said, yeah, to die. And wow. I said, so what did her partner do? And he said, he stayed with her to die with her.
Well, I can relate to that.
Really? In what way? How? Tell me.
In the way that in the group that I was coming with, there was six of us and our guide, which we call Coyote, like a coyote, right? And there was a couple, young lady, young man, and the young lady began fainting. I believe she was pregnant. I couldn't visually see it, but that's my assumption. And she would faint after walking for almost 14 hours because we ended up walking almost 18 hours, right? Day and a half. And the boyfriend would ask or actually tell the coyote, be like, man, please help me. She's fainting. And the coyote will bluntly say curse words at him and be like, I'm not a flipping doctor, you know, I'm a coyote. Oh. And so you got to get her up. And personally, I felt so sorry for both of them, but I just kept on remembering in my mind the words that my mom said to me when she asked me that I would, when she said to me that I was going to come to the United States. She said, you make sure you stay as close as possible to the coyote. By no means do you leave that man to walk any farther than 4 to 5 feet from you. So I was close to that man like I was a tick to a cow.
Oh my.
Yes.
So I want to go back because you mentioned something that I think you're correct. A lot of people aren't aware of. And that is how difficult it is for people coming from Guatemala, El Salvador, perhaps Nicaragua, to come up through Mexico. Because the Mexicans are tough on the Central Americans, right?
Even here in the United States, they are tough on us.
I think this is fascinating from a cultural standpoint because so many people in the United States, and I've even heard people say, well, you know, when a person looks, quote unquote, looks Hispanic, right? Oh, those Mexicans. And it's like, they don't realize that we're from like 22 different countries, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And you're in California, which is a lot of Mexican. Uh-huh. So what ways are the Mexicans, in what ways do they make it difficult for, say, people from Central America?
First, the presumption that Central Americans are lesser than Mexicans. And so almost like a classism scenario, even if the Mexican people don't have any money here, even if we are working in the same job, they still discriminate. They think we are less intelligent. And in fact, when I travel all over and I am presenting to the stage and I'm the main person to be seen on the stage, and I get into the speech, and then I say, and I happen to be from Guatemala, and I could read their face and disbelief, like, he's not short, he's not dark, he's not bad spoken, because they have that image of us Central Americans that every time we speak, we use curse words, we have no manners, and they put us on a box. And sometimes we don't get the jobs opportunities. Sometimes we don't get the promotion. Sometimes we don't get, even in school, I remember learning English. A lot of my classmates were Mexicans and they would tell me to shut up because I continue to try to actually speak, right? Speak the language so I could speak English. And they would gather up as a group to try to intimidate me, but I don't have that type of personality to be intimidated easily. So I prevail every time.
Your spirit is amazing. And you and I go back now, what, 3 or 4 years, I think, that we kind of came across one another. And it's been amazing to watch your growth. And by the way, your English is very good. So you should feel very proud of your progress. It's, you know, because when I came across you, when I first, you know, you were younger, you were like just somehow trying to make it, right?
Yes.
And I think you've gotten some really good advice from some people, which has been outstanding. And you've taken it. One thing I'll say about you is that you've taken advice, right? And so
gracefully.
And I think that that's a great trait that you have. And I'm curious. So you come into the U.S. at that time, no English, I assume, correct? Mm-hmm.
Correct. Zero.
And you're 16 and you're not documented.
Correct.
What was that? I mean, that must have been one heck of a culture shock for you, right? I mean, you left your family and right. What was that like for you to be in the U.S.? What was it like, man?
Okay, well, first when I arrived to Hayward, California, I've seen many movies of the U.S. and when I got out of the car, I said, "This is the U.S.?" Because I came to like most people call it the ghetto neighborhood, right? And I was like, "Is this the U.S.? This is it?"
And this is what I came for.
This is what I came for here. And I come from a small village where we didn't have electricity until the year 2000. But because of the movies, I had just this expectation. The culture shock was at work when about a month later, they found me a job at a warehouse, and I've just found people from all over the world working there. And I just had no idea what they were saying. You know, I just had no grasp of the English language. And so I would try to pair up with as many Hispanics as I could. And again, there is not only the perception of you're Central American, but they know that you're new. So Hispanics know other Hispanic when they are new in the country. So it's like, oh, so this guy, you know, we can mold him however we want. And but there I was, just simply letting it be and going with the flow until about a year and a half later when I was able to join high school. And that was another shock of the entire school system for me.
What was that like? And by the way, you're now molding other people. So that's
in a good way.
In a good way, right? And so life certainly has its twists and turns, right?
Indeed.
So you got into high school and you said that was another culture shock. So what was that like?
Yes. First of all, the school, because I only went to sixth grade in Guatemala. And when you go to Guatemala, first to sixth grade, you go to one classroom and you have one teacher for all the subjects. And here, I had to go to school, go to one classroom, couple of hours, go to another classroom, couple of hours, go to another classroom, couple of hours, and for six different classes throughout the day. And of course, entirely new language with a diversified group of students every time in every class. And then trying to figure out how to go get my food, because they give you food here. And then finding out, oh, I actually need to pay for this food. And I don't know how this, you know, they tell me like, oh, it's $1.75 or whatever. And I'm trying to find out which one is the nickel, which one is the penny, which one is the, you know, the 1 cent. So that was a little bit shocking for me. And having the counselor, having to check in, and they telling you this credit system, how it works. And all I cared about was I wanted to speak English. I didn't care about graduation, no points, no clubs, no sports. I said, you know, teach me some English.
Really? And, wow.
The interesting thing was, my English teacher was a gentleman who grew up in somewhere in Africa. And so he had a very thick accent. So there I was trying to learn from somebody whose English was not their first language, and their accent was, it was very hard to understand. So, but somehow, you know, again, I prevailed, and here I am speaking much better than before.
Where did you get your interest, like, in listening to motivational speakers? Because I know you listen to a lot of motivational speakers. I mean, think you listen to Brian Tracy, Jim Rohn, you know.
Absolutely.
Where did that start for you? Who got you turned on to that?
Short answer, I was recruited into an MLM company.
Just so everybody knows, multi-level marketing.
Multi-level marketing. Long answer, once I began listening to it, I got hooked. And here I am. Years later, continuously, not only listening to it, but going to the conference in person and investing a lot of, finances into my development.
You actually are on Univision now, like once every 2 weeks, collaborating on something. What's that project about?
So that project's about part of my mission to continue to inspire the youth. And I discovered that it's not only about the youth, but those who work with the youth or are involved with the youth, the parents, family members, community members, organizations. And so I said, I want to feature the organizations and the people who help the youth at no cost to the youth. So everything that is for free, I make sure I feature it to spread awareness so that everybody finds out about these resources that are there. And sometimes the youth, they don't take it upon themselves to have the initiative to look it up on Google, and those are there. And so I bring it out to their awareness.
Let's say you're talking to an American person who's never been to Guatemala, right? What would you tell them about Guatemala? Just be a teacher here for a minute, right?
Yes.
Just teach us about Guatemala.
culturally, we're very friendly people, and we welcome Americans. We admire Americans. We almost have the perception of Americans as some type of gods because of how the media puts out the United States as. It's culturally, stereotypically, not everybody's bad spoken, not everybody's short, not everybody is like brown skin, like most people see us as. And we have some very, very smart people who are looking for opportunities. And I would say there's a lot of potential in Guatemalan people, because this is what I also say to Americans here in the United States when I have a chance to have a conversation. I said, I am the kid that you see when you go on vacation and you kind of feel sorry for them. It's like, oh, poor little kid, you know, let me give him $1, let me give him $2. Oh, and I happen to have made it here to your country now. And so just think of me as that, as like, I'm glad he made it here, right? Without you having to give me $1 or $2, because I'm putting in all the effort necessary to be able to adapt, to leverage this and develop these skills that I already possess. So I had undeveloped skills. And so that's what I like to say to them, you know, think of me as that. And now don't think of me as that. Think of most of those Guatemalan youth that you come across. Those are the youth that when you go see them, you're like, oh, poor little kid. I wish he had more opportunity. Well, and now we're here. So that's what I would like them to know. Culturally, we welcome Americans. We admire them. We think this country is very progressive. And stereotypically, we are very smart. We're sharp. We are very heavy on religion also, which makes us people of faith and which can transfer into relentless, you know. And so we are very relentless in the pursuit of what we want because of this faith that we have engraved within us. And it doesn't really have to apply to religion all the time. In a nutshell, that's what I would like to say. We are like a gold mine, and we just need to be polished.
That's amazing, man. So Guatemala is tropical. Is it mountainous? And I mean, I know some things about Guatemala, but I'm asking you to get you to talk a little bit about the topography. A lot of beautiful beaches there as well, mountains, volcanoes like in Costa Rica. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yes, definitely. Well, I wish I would share a lot of insight, but I was so poor that I couldn't really travel to many places of Guatemala. And so definitely they call it El País de la Eterna Primavera, right? The country of the eternal spring, because you can always go there and enjoy different fruits that are there from, you know, from the forestry. And yes, the beach is very nice. I was born in car, maybe like 20 minutes away from the beach in Guatemala. So I would go on a bike. It would take me 1 hour on my bicycle to get to the beach, and we would go fish there. Definitely volcanoes, plenty of volcanoes. You know, there's a fire volcano, there's a water volcano, el Volcán de Agua, el Volcán de Fuego, el Volcán de Pacaya, right? There's a volcano called Pacaya. And of course, most Americans are aware of Antigua Guatemala, which, you know, is very populated by Americans now. Right. And so that's as far as I know.
What about, like, been a lot of gang activity in Central America, right? Mostly due to the drug trafficking that's come up through Central America to Mexico. How has that impacted Guatemala? Is it safe for tourists to go? What are things like as far as security is concerned?
Okay. Based on my knowledge, it's safer than most other places south of the Central America, because we like tourism. You know, we understand it's very important for the growth of our local economy, and we take care of them. Again, the admiration of Americans is there, and that as a community makes us want to take care of the tourists that are there so that they continue to come back. That's why I said earlier, many Americans live in Antigua Guatemala because they find it to be a safe place. And they travel to other places like Panajachel, like Xelajú, Quetzaltenango, and these are different states of the country of Guatemala. I would say it's pretty safe.
Have you been back since you came to the U.S.?
In 2015, I had a chance to go back for 3 weeks for my mom's birthday. And I didn't stay longer only because I had applied to a private technical program in San Francisco, And I was on a waiting list and I had to come back so I could join this program. And that's how I joined the big tech companies later on.
Right, because you worked as a, I think in sales, right? At Salesforce.com, or I know you were with Salesforce for a while. And
yes, I worked as a temp employee for Apple as a computer technician. I worked as a contractor for Tesla as a robot technician. Really? Then I interned at Salesforce as an onboarding coordinator. Then I worked for Uber on their self-driving technology. Then I transferred to General Motors for a company they bought, which is called Cruise Automation on self-driving technology as well. And the last job that I had was as a data management specialist for another startup on real estate.
So you've had some pretty cool experiences, man.
From a guy who used to milk cows, I think it's pretty cool.
OV inspires. You are inspiring. So I think that's pretty cool. And you took some sort of class at Harvard, right? I mean, what did you take there?
The course is called Entrepreneurship Essential through the Harvard Business School online. They have an online platform now where you can take several certifications. I would say at the very beginning of it, I was very surprised that it came easy to me. I was intimidated logging into the platform to start the program. So like, I don't want to feel like I'm not intelligent, you know? And then I get into it and it's like, this is what I've been studying in all these business books all these days, all this time. And so that's why I say we are a gold mine, because we do have this knowledge. It just hasn't been brought up. I like the phrase I heard somebody else said, us, I would say Central Americans, just for the sake of me being in Central America, we're not looking for a hand out. We're looking for a hand up.
Right.
And we're willing to do what it takes.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man, I'm just thrilled to talk with you.
Likewise.
You know, I live in the Dominican Republic.
Yes.
And every day I see young boys who are those kids that the tourists give a dollar or two to, right? So maybe they give them 50 pesos, you know, or 50 pesos, or maybe they give them 100 pesos. And then I talk with you, and it's just a great reminder to me. You know, maybe there's the next OV, and people don't even see it. They don't recognize it. It's just a poor little kid who's never going to have anything that, let's throw him a dollar or two, right? And
yes,
maybe that kid, just like you, just they have greatness inside of them, you know? I love what you're doing, and I love who you're becoming. I think it's just amazing. You're a great, great lesson for so many of us. When you're out in schools, right, and you're talking with these kids, junior high school kids, right? What's your read on that culture? Where do you think we're at from a standpoint of these kids? Where are they at?
Okay, concerning what I see is the culture, the kids' culture, they're oppressed by how much pressure there is with the technology. I recently downloaded there's an app called TikTok, which is super popular with kids, especially elementary kids and middle school students. And when I was watching these short videos, I was like, geez, Louise, we're going downhill. And so very much pressure of these social media apps. But the issue is the adults sharing content on there too, trying to influence the younger ones. There's no value whatsoever for the youth in those things. So they are feeling oppressed, and there's this kind of expectation of the youth to behave like adults without having the maturity to do so. And so that makes me very, very sad. And sometimes I wonder to myself, who is my daughter going to marry when she grows up? Because I see the reality of what's happening in these apps, you know, just from an observation standpoint of view. And then also I had a conversation with somebody who has a daycare, and she was sharing with me that some parents ask her to take care of children for 8 hours a day. And then the 8 hour day is done. And they happen to call and say, hey, would you please, please take care of our children like a couple of more hours. 8 hour day becomes a 12 hour day. So what that means is, you know, the culturally, the poor kids are forgotten because of so much emphasis on the adults of their career growth, which demands for them to continue to work more and more and more. And the entire generation is suffering from being oppressed and forgotten. And that's what I see. And
do they talk with you about this?
Based on the messages that they share with me privately on Instagram, primarily, because I don't use TikTok much. I was just watching to see, I was exploring it. What I read in those messages is like they are saying, you know, I feel alone. There's nobody around me, even though every young kid has somebody around them. The problem is that person or those people, because of how society is, are making them feel forgotten, and maybe not on purpose, but it just so happens to be that way. And I have over 100 messages that they have sent me because I always screenshot them and I put them on my Dropbox so that I can have them as a reminder as to why I must never stop doing what I'm doing.
It's interesting because I've read articles as well on this, you know, from a cultural standpoint, that they're calling Gen Z the loneliest generation, right?
Right.
It's the most connected, right? From a standpoint of just having, for through social media, having contact with a lot of people. But the contact, I guess the contact isn't culturally, it's not meaningful contact, right?
They're connected, but they're connected to strangers. That's the problem.
Right.
That's and strangers will not care about you more than your mom or your dad would. Now I'm speaking from as a father, right? Because I am a father, and
right,
I don't think anybody would ever love my baby more than I do. And so kids, yes, they are connected to 3,000 followers, but they are all strangers.
It's crazy, right?
Yes, that's the problem. And the problem is those 3,000 followers have an expectation of the kids to be connected all the time, to get their attention all the time. And so it is, of course, human nature for us to want to be accepted into a group. But the problem is we cannot be accepted and be connected with a group of 10,000 people all day, every day.
That's interesting. I think that is concerning culturally that, you know, the kids are, you use the word oppressed. And at first I thought you maybe were saying pressured, but you actually reused the word oppressed like two or three times. What are some of the good things about you're seeing in the culture of our young people?
So the bright side is they're very savvy with this new technology. You usually have an older person try to figure out, and they'll take maybe even a couple of days to figure out these new technologies that are coming out. And the young person will take just a couple of tutorials. Maybe they would even watch a couple of tutorials, and boom, in a day, they have it down. And so that creates for them opportunities for the future, right? When they go into opportunities for jobs and stuff like that, because they are very current. And if we teach them personal branding, then they could use to learn, because these are simply tools, they could learn to use these tools to brand themselves and position themselves the right way to get selected to internships, scholarships, programs, grants, and all this other good stuff that is on the other side.
So let's say I'm a school director, right? I'm a superintendent, yes, or I'm a principal, and I want to have a motivational speaker like Ovi Vasquez come in. What should I expect? What should I be looking for? What are they asking you for when you go speak at these schools? What's kind of on their minds?
They usually ask me to avoid the subjects of religion, politics, and in some places, suicide. If there's a high rate of suicide, they don't want me to touch the subject. It's very sensitive. And so what they want is, Ovi, I would like for you to share your story from an authentic angle and so they could hear this. And then, Ovi, can you please share with them that they have to continue their education, right? And so I tailor my message to that. But what the directors don't really understand is that kids these days, they don't really aspire to be doctors or lawyers as much as they probably did before. Now they aspire to be Instagram influencers, YouTubers, and they want to be more entrepreneurial, you know? For them, it's cooler if I went there and I say, hi guys, I'm Ovi Vasquez and I'm a YouTuber and I don't need to say nothing else, you know? That's right. Much cooler. They'll be like, oh man, this guy is cool. I want to know what he says, you know, how he got into it, how many followers you have, how many likes, how many views you get every day, you know? And so that's what the directors should keep in mind, that the kids don't really care about what you care about for them when it comes to like what they want to be when they grow up. Because what happens is sometimes, and I've discovered this, many people in the educational industry, they are not really updated with these technologies and new trends. And so they become blown away when I begin talking to them, even about marketing strategies that I implement and how I connect with them, you know? And so just because you don't believe in YouTube or being a YouTuber doesn't mean it's not true, doesn't mean it's not happening, doesn't mean people are not making money, and doesn't mean your students cannot become good at it. They just have to understand. They have to be resilient the right way, consistent, right message, right audience, and they have to understand what comes with being relevant, right?
Well, it's beyond relevance, right? I mean, if you look at cultural relevance, okay, and you go, I need to learn to connect, create, and collaborate together. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if I have a disconnect, whether it's generational disconnect or whether it's just a disconnect of culture, so if administration in our educational system is not connected to the young people, and if the young people are saying, I'd much rather be a YouTuber, right? Uh-huh. Or an Instagrammer than yes. a doctor or a lawyer, and we continue to teach them in a way or try to guide them in a way in which they really don't want to go, that's a disconnect.
Correct.
Right. And yes. and so being culturally connected, at least with a deep understanding of that, I think is critical. It's important. But it takes humility on the part of adult leaders to be able to kind of step back and honestly, without judging, right?
Correct.
Hey, this is where things are at.
This is where they are.
And how do we connect there so that we can really achieve our goals here? So I think that's interesting. I want mm-hmm. to go back to Guatemala, Ovi, before we kind of close the conversation here.
Of course.
Do you desire to go back to Guatemala to speak there, to motivate young people? Is that something that's in your heart and your soul to be able to go back to your people?
Oh, yes. This has been in my mind and my soul for a long time, but I can't as of today. And what I would tell them is study a lot online courses in English. So main two things I would tell them to focus is first, learn to speak English. And now if you have Facebook and you use it, you can access YouTube so you can learn English. And two, learn to use different softwares for marketing so that you can then be employed by companies worldwide so you can open this skill set. And of course, emphasize the fact that we have a lot of potential.
So I'm going to encourage you to do something. And I think I've given you a little bit of good advice from time to time.
Gold.
So since you're talking about technology, .gt is the domain extension for Guatemala.
That's correct.
I want to encourage you to go and purchase ovi.gt or oviinspira.gt, maybe better, because you can be there now without being there.
You're right.
Okay. But you need to use their Guatemalan domain extension because that's what is used in these countries. Like in the Dominican, it's do.do. I just want to encourage you. You don't need to go back to go back, but they do need you. And you have a message that your people need. And I want to encourage you to start on that project and leverage the technology that you have now learned and start reaching your people.
I will take you up on that advice.
And I will help you in any way I can because you know my heart.
Very much appreciated. Yeah, I will do that. You know, I'm an implementer.
I know you are. You're a learner. Ovi, I know DACA has made a huge impact in your life and through your life is making a huge impact on a lot of other people.
Yes.
And DACA is deferred action for childhood arrivals, and you qualified for that. Talk to me a little bit about what DACA has meant for you, because you're a dreamer.
Yes. Like the song Dreamer.
Not only are you a dreamer from a standpoint of motivational learning and speaking, but you are literally a dreamer.
Yes.
Right? Talk with us just about people like you, because I think that there are a lot of people who think people who are in the country because of the Dream Act, that maybe they're just trying to take advantage of something. And I want them to hear from someone like you, what that has meant in your life, and also how I think people can start to get a flavor now of how that's impacting a lot of other people as well, not just other immigrant people.
Yes. Well, I would say it created a ripple effect in my life because many of the schools that I travel to and even some college campuses, they do an extensive background check on me before accepting me to go and share the stage where there are over 600 students sometimes. And if I didn't have the Dream Act with me, which we call it DACA for short, if I didn't have the DACA with me, I wouldn't be allowed on that campus. Even though I do have a relevant message, I do have these strategies for the students to join these big companies. And together with my wife, we were able to, you know, purchase a home. And this is a big accomplishment. as a couple for us, and having peace of mind that I can legally travel at least within the United States to go and work on my mission to inspire the students. The good that the government did to me by allowing me to apply for this permit, because it wasn't just granted. I had to apply and go through an extensive background check to get approved. And I have to do that every 2 years, which actually tomorrow I'm going to my next fingerprinting again. And that benefit did not die with me. It continues to go on to more and more youth. We are surely doing our very best to continue to keep this status while it's still available. And so I always, you know, respect the authorities in everywhere, in every place I go. And because I know this is my livelihood. This is how I'm going to continue to move on forward, be a leader and make an impact. If I behave badly, my impact will end probably there.
And that would be true whether it's DACA or not.
Correct.
I think we have recently learned a lot of those lessons, right?
Absolutely.
I have to tell you how much I admire you and what you've been able to accomplish. And it's just amazing to continue to watch your growth. I celebrate you, Ovi, because you are an inspiration to all of us who get a chance to hear you.
Well, I thank you, because your belief in me uplifts my confidence in me, and it serves as a fuel for me to continue to impact others.
My guest today has been Ovidilio Vasquez. Thank you for being on Culture Matters. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise. So thank you.